Hello, welcome to BD and Me's show on Raw 12:51 AM.
Thank you.
How are you?
Good, very good. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
No worries.
Taking your time out. How are you doing? I've just asked you that question. So you're going on tour soon.
I've been on tour for 2 months.
You're already on tour.
Yeah.
You're already on tour, and you're coming to the Warwick Arts Centre on the 2nd of December.
Yep.
With Dark. We'll start with, why Dark? Why is it called Dark?
Because we didn't want the wrong type of audience members turn up. When I was younger, I got very lucky and I got to do sort of, you know, some TV shows and stuff. But obviously, when you're on television, you have to be very family-friendly material. And that is not most of my material. So we wanted to make sure that it was, you know, labelled as, you know, that it's going to be a lot darker than the stuff you see on television. And also, I personally don't think the show is dark, but I've been called dark by some people before, and I just think it's such a ridiculous term for comedy.
It's something that we've seen you mentioned in the past before. I watched your TED talk sort of about that and storytelling and why comedians are called offensive but other sort of stories aren't. Has it been something that's always plagued you and you've had a difficulty with it? It's been a big issue for you or a topic of conversation at least?
No, it's just never been something. I've offended a few people, but I don't respect anyone that I've offended. Like, I just think it's such a childish reaction to someone who's offended. Leave the room. Like, what are you? How are you letting this ruin your day? Like, a man said a thing, and I'm sad now. I find it pathetic.
Doing a TED talk must be something quite different to stand up. How did you find approaching that?
Yeah, that was tough. Like, because I'm so used to, like, you know, writing something and when I deliver it, you know, leaving pauses for sort of laughter and stuff. But in this, because there was no jokes in it, essentially, because it was just a talk, it was very hard to sort of keep a rhythm. Cause in stand-up, there's always points when you get to, you know, take a breath, engage the audience based on their reaction. But if they're not laughing, because it's not funny, but because, you know, there's nothing to laugh at, it's a sort of serious talk. Yeah, it was a bit threw me off my game a bit.
So we saw that from a very young age you started comedy. At the age of 16, you were writing for Frankie Boyle on Mock the Week.
This is one of the stories I always have to correct. Because of the joyous ways the media works. When I was 16, my mother met Frankie Boyle at a gig. He was doing a corporate gig, and she knew I wanted to get into stand-up. Frankie, being the lovely man that he is, went above and beyond to give her his email address and sort of to pass on to me if I had any questions. I emailed him and he was like, I can't be bothered answering these questions, why don't you just come and hang out? So during the Fringe, I went to his show, I hung out with him, he took me to the stand and introduced me to the staff there, to the point where I eventually, you know, that's how I got my first ever gig at the stand. He introduced me to loads of other comedians, he was who teach me, you know, to watch lots of stand-up and sort of learn. And then one day he was like, oh, you should also learn how to, you know, I want to see what your comedic writing style is sort of like. So, and he was like, if you want, you can, you know, write a couple of jokes based on the topics for Mock the Week. At no point in his career was he sat in a green room going, oh my God, I can't go on. Some 16-year-old child hasn't sent me the jokes. I was of no value to him, but he was of immense value to me.
Yeah. So comedy was something you always wanted to get into then from a young age?
Oh, yeah, I've watched stand-up since I was like 5 or 6 years old.
Yep.
So, sort of returning to your mum there, who you just brought up, you've had a lot of support from your family and from other people. I was reading one moment, but not certain how true it is anymore, that your mum she bought you a fake ID so you could actually get into the gigs that you were performing at as you weren't leaving the clubs.
Yeah, that's true. She did buy me a fake ID for, yeah, because when I was 17, some bars wouldn't let me in. So my mother, and it was an awful fake ID. Like, I don't know where she got it from, but it was not good. Like, it was essentially just the words "I am 18" written on a bit of paper. It was awful.
In crayon.
Yeah. But it worked for somehow. It worked, and I absolutely never used it to buy alcohol.
So going back to your kind of the roots of your career, obviously Edinburgh is a big part of most comedians' career, and certainly yours. How is the whole Edinburgh experience for you? What was it for you?
I just love the Edinburgh Festival. I mean, I live up here, so that's makes it a bit easier. But no, I mean, all the comedians that I like, dead or alive, and respect and want to be as good as, all of the sort of same mantra or same sort of thing, which is you just need to keep on writing and doing material and doing a new hour every year or every 2 years. And I think for me it's just important. I need to turn over a new hour of material every year, just because it keeps me working. I've got a fan base that if you come out every year, so it'd be unfair. I think I've got a year to write an hour of material. Like, that should be the easiest thing in the world as a comedian.
So, talking of writing new material, I've seen quite a bit that you've been on Conan, which must be an entirely different audience. Is it an entirely different type of stand-up that you have to write for that? Do you write a set for Conan and a set for the UK, or how does that go for you?
No, I just, if anything, like, Conan is way more lenient than British television. Way more lenient. Yeah, I mean, I got away with a joke in my first episode of Conan that I never thought I'd get away with. Like, whenever I'm writing a television set, I always put in one joke that I know they're going to take out, just because all these sort of, someone always needs to feel like they've done their job, so they'll look through your set, pick out something. They need to feel like they've done their job. So I always used to just put in offensive joke that I knew they'd take out, and then I put it the same joke in Conan, and the lovely man who books the show, JP, was like, "I love it." And I'm like, even this one, he was like, "Yeah," because it's one of my favorite jokes. It's on the Conan clip. It's the one about my auntie, and yeah, I mean, if you go watch the first ever Conan clip, you can see me telling the joke, and I the surprise in my face.
I did watch it. You seem quite taken aback with, especially getting that in America.
I was thrilled, like, because first of all, it's not an offensive joke. It's offensive if you're a moron. Like, when you're watching something, you take base level words, like you just hear a word and you react, then yes, it's offensive. But then if you are that type of person, just throw yourself off a bridge. We don't need you anymore.
It's one way to deal with them, isn't it? So obviously, Conan is a big deal for anyone, to be honest. How did that come about? How did all of a sudden you're flying over to the States to be on Conan?
Just doing what I was doing, writing a new hour every year, doing the Fringe, just trying to become a better comedian, and doing stuff because I wanted to, not because I thought it would get me more fame. I was doing, I'm doing what I wanted to do, and the guy JP is, who books the show, is just he's a really good guy. He just came to one of my shows and was like, "Do you want to be on Conan?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I might."
It seems as well that you started on television quite early. Robot Wars was quite a big one for us to find out that you were on.
Yeah, my dad and my mum and I went on Robot Wars, and we got knocked out a couple of times, but that's because my dad kept making robots where we legally weren't allowed to use the weapons. My father, being the genius he was, ended up getting a sort of job, and we got knocked out for like an extra 2 weeks driving and working on all the house robots.
Do you still have the robots?
Yeah, if you go to my parents' house, we have the graveyard downstairs is just, just a series of dead robots. I always sort of feel like in 400 years when, excavators dig up my parents' basement, it's going to be so confusing. It's going to look like the Terminator movies did happen and were historically accurate.
How long have you known your roommate and touring partner, Kai? How did you sort of meet him?
I met Kai in 2009, I think. But I was about to do my first. It was 2009 because I was doing my first ever Edinburgh Festival show, and then I was going to be taking it on tour for a couple of dates. And yeah, Kai was. Yeah, Kai, my agent signed me the year before, and then she signed Kai the year after, and was like, "Do you guys want to tour together?" And we were like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And then, you know, when you suddenly spend 60 days every hour of every day in each other's company, you slowly learn to become friends.
It's very much the same here on our radio show with us too. We weren't friends to begin with, but now we...
bear each other at least.
Yeah. We also read as well that you no longer give free tickets to reviewers. We were hoping we might get a set of free tickets to your show, but clearly no longer.
I've never on that side of things. But yeah, I mean, if you're reviewing the show, I'm not giving you free tickets. You can literally go shove them. Oh, no, you can't shove them where the sun doesn't shine, because I'm not giving.
You're not giving them.
No. Why would I ever give you free tickets to come and watch something not to enjoy it? Like, that makes no sense. I stopped giving free tickets to reviewers because I don't respect the opinion of 99% of people who review. I just don't. Like, for several reasons, comedy is incredibly subjective to who appointed you. Like, how big is your ego that you think you're the voice of all comedy? And I've just seen it done badly so many, many, many times. I've seen bad reviews, not like bad reviews, like, but just badly written reviews by bad reviewers who don't know anything about comedy, who don't know anything about writing, who just don't know anything about how to review, putting this thing out, and then it affecting, you know, friends of mine, you know, who've, you know, spent a year working on a show just to have some, you know, journalist student come in on his seventh show of the day and decide that he's going to be a, you know, full feminist, and just, and you don't realize how poisonous it all is, and dangerous, and I think they're all scum.
It doesn't seem that you've suffered in any way from not having the reviewers in your show. If anything, it's just been on the app constantly for you. So,
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I know so many reviewers that I genuinely get on with, and I know there are some very good reviewers who are widely respected. But just for me personally, I don't understand what kind of person, what happened in your childhood that made you go down that career path.
Yeah. I read somewhere else that, as well, that you've turned down the opportunity to appear on Splash. Is this true, and why on earth did you not want to appear on Splash?
Oh yeah, that was a couple of years ago. I mean, you get some weird offers all the time. I've turned down a lot of stuff, but just because, like, I don't want to be famous for the sake of, like, I don't want to be famous for the sake of being famous. Like, I want to be the best stand-up in the world, and going on that television show is not going to do that. That's going to open me up to, I mean, the type of people who watch Splash, I don't want in my shows.
Yeah. Like,
that seems
fair. That's not my fan base.
Have you had any offers from any other shows? What's kind of the strangest show offer you've had?
Loads, but I won't mention them because I have friends that took the job, and I don't want. And I understand why they did, and they're very good at it. They're much better than I would have been. Yeah. And, you know, all these other shows, because I'm not good at panel shows. It's not the type of comedian I am. But I do have, you know, huge respect for those that are able to, you know, do it. So I don't want to. And then, it would just get blown out of proportion. I'm like, oh, Daniel Sloss says this show sucks, and that's why he turned it down. No, it's not. It's because I couldn't do it.
fair.
Saw one quite interesting story, actually, with a comedian out in America that you had a chat with about a time you were in Sweden. And
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, that's definitely... Yeah, I mean, I mean, if people want to watch if people want to hear the story of one of the worst things I ever did, it's the Pete Holmes show, a clip on YouTube, when I mean, I don't know if I ended the marriage, but I certainly didn't assist in any way.
So, We are a radio show, so we do ultimately have to play music at some point during our show. So, seeing as we've got you here, can we ask you for a request? What song would be your number one radio tune?
It's Seasons by Future Islands.
Okay. Yeah,
we'll get that on for you.
Any reason behind that? Just a favourite song,
tune.
Or yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Today. Yeah. Well, Daniel Sloss, it's been absolutely wonderful to have you on. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your tour.
Thanks very much, guys. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Thank you.